listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
And contrary to what you might have heard, I am not Paul Strolley.
You are not. You are far more attractive. You are far more attractive.
You are far more entertaining.
I noticed you didn't dispute that.
Yes,
dispute that.
I didn't. I just kind of slipped in one for you there.
Good, good.
How are you, Paul?
I am good, and it's Thursday at 1
it
o'clock,
is.
Which I
got
to tell you, I'm digging it so much more than the 4 o'clock Monday thing.
Yes.
Just
I am too.
Because I'm here and I've only had this point time and day I've only had one scotch. So I feel like I'm sharper. I feel like I'm more lucid. You know how it is.
Well, at least half that word. Yeah. All right. Yes. So we have before we even get started, you know, we have to pay homage to our wonderful sponsor, Breakdown Services. And they are, ladies and gentlemen, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, of course, as you know, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, simply visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We are grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our weekly live arts calendar.
And in studio, Paul, today,
yes,
we have a fantastic guest. He's a performer who has performed on concert stages and in theaters throughout the United States as well as internationally. Starring in Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera in San Francisco for 2 years and touring extensively with Sammy Kahn in his original musical Words and Music. In the blockbuster musical Les Miserables, he played Marius on Broadway and
Enjolras.
Thank you, sir.
In Los Angeles production.
And is one of the featured soloists on the international cast album. Please welcome Raymond Sarr.
How are you, Raymond?
I'm good. I got to get that track of the clapping so my wife acknowledges me every once in a while.
Just carry it with you. Just carry it with you. Yeah, just automatically. Yes, a lot of people, I'm going to take that. With me, it's canned laughter.
Yes, that's what we should do.
With me, it's canned laughter.
Let's manufacture it.
Because Monica is the worst audience, but the greatest person for content. Because
yeah.
she won't laugh at much, but when she laughs, I know I'm writing that shit down. And in just a few moments, joining us via telephone from Seattle, she's currently touring the world in her award-winning one-woman show, Marilyn Forever Blonde, the Marilyn Monroe story in her own words and music. Now, this play premiered in 2007 at the Stella Adler Theater right here in Hollywood, where she won the prestigious Lee Hartgrave Fame Award for Best Acting. Sonny Thompson will join us shortly. But first, Michael, before we get to that, how was your week?
How was my week? I had a really interesting week, Paul.
Is it anything you could talk about on the air?
Yes, actually. Well, one day anyway. Yeah, Friday, last Friday. No, I spent the afternoon with the cast of The Producers, which is getting ready to open at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, really?
This weekend. So I had the pleasure of interviewing Rebecca Romijn.
Oh, you know who she is, of course. Do. She's almost as attractive as our first guest.
Yeah. Well,
I've seen pictures of this young lady's photo, though.
She's probably almost as attractive. Yeah. This is a pretty amazing photo. Sonny, if you're listening, we'll be talking about that photo, okay?
Yes, we'll be talking about that again.
Yes, no, she was delightful, Rebecca, and also the other stars of the show, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, who is from Modern Family.
Oh, yes.
That young man with the red hair, a very, very funny guy. And Gary Beach recreating his role in this version here at the Bowl, as well as Roger Bart, who we have
right,
on the show earlier
the show,
this
yeah.
year. And several other people. So it was a wonderful afternoon doing the interviews with them and getting the footage of the rehearsal, which Susan Stroman is directing this production as well. So she did Broadway, of course, in the film.
Right.
And it became the biggest, or still is, the biggest viewed video on Broadway World. Which
really?
Is what we were doing it for, coverage for Broadway World Television. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So, yeah, it was
So great, people great who want to see that, they just go to BroadwayWorld.com or just go to Broadway World and do a search for The Producers LA?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
They'll find it. It's on the Los Angeles homepage and the national page, so it's getting... wrote me the other day, just inundated with thousands and thousands and thousands of hits on it. So,
oh, that's great.
How great is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
And how was yours, sir?
Oh, it was fine. You know, we're plugging away. We have a Sea Glass production planned for the fall. We're doing a Christmas twist, which is obviously a spoof of Charles Dickens. I did the first one 20 years ago with the Illegitimate Players in Chicago, and I'm directing this one. And it's just going to be a blast. We did it 2 years ago with Of Grapes and Nuts. We did a Steinbeck spoof that we had done 20 years ago, 21 years ago then in Chicago, which and we did out here. It was a
great hit.
And
that was a combination of
Grapes
course,
of Wrath yes. and Mice and Men.
Right.
And it was so well received, and we found out that, you know, LA does dig parody, so it was received very well. So.
Well, and done as well as you all do it, and I'm not just paying lip
Thank
service
you.
To your wonderful theater company, but yeah. You guys are amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Indeed.
So let's, shall we start with our first guest?
I think so. She's so kind to do this from her home.
Let's give her the intro she is due.
Okay. Let's do it.
Well, do you want to go ahead, Michael?
No.
Why don't you do it?
It's fine. Oh, you want me to do it?
Okay. Yeah. I think it's you.
All right.
Because I did her first intro.
All right. It has been called the theatrical event of the year and best touring production of 2009 by the Connecticut Critics Circle and has played to rave reviews throughout the U.S., Canada, New Zealand, and most recently London's West End. And it will soon be right here in town at the historic El Portal Theater. The show is Marilyn, Forever Blonde, and the title role is brought to life by our first guest. Please welcome Sunny Thompson.
Sunny!
Hello.
How are you?
Great.
Thank
so lovely to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show. And I'm very intrigued by this, and I want to jump right into it. First of all, I went to the Michael and I obviously got the promotional material for the show, and my first thought in looking at the promo material was, how do they possibly get the licensing to use these photos? Because I was like, I said, there's no way that, you know, anyone could resemble Marilyn Monroe as much as the. But it's really astounding. Now, did you get that before you did the show? Did you get that comment before you decided to pursue this particular production?
No, I never thought of myself as looking like Marilyn, even other than blonde hair and blue eyes. You know, that was about the only. Every now and again, a guy when I was growing up would say, "You look like Marilyn Monroe," and I'm thinking, "Yeah, you have ulterior motives," you know, or something like that. But I never really thought of it. And then I was doing a show, my stage show in Vegas and at the Rio, and part of the show was a segment of historical blondes, you know, to blonde bombshells, and it was a comedic segment. And one of the blondes, of course, was Marilyn Monroe, and I put on the short wig. And my husband, who had written and produced that show and wrote that little comedic segment, you know, said, "Gosh, you know, I never thought of you as Marilyn before because I always had long blonde hair." And he said, "I have a play that I wrote a long time. I want you to read for me." And so that was really the first. And when he asked me to do Marilyn, I read the play and I said, no woman should be compared to Marilyn Monroe. I mean, that's just not fair. You know, that's really not fair. And it was way too much work. And I'm busy doing what I love to do. I have a band and I have dancers and I'm singing and dancing. And I'm having a blast doing what I'm doing. So it really didn't appeal to me. And we weren't married at the time. So, after we were married, the nagging ensued, and so I took it on as an acting piece. So long story long there, but I never really thought of myself as Marilyn before that. But after, 2.5 hours in makeup, you know, that helps a lot.
Well, let me ask you something, Sonny. This is Michael. How much, the early on, you just explained how this, kind of was born, but how long did you have to dedicate yourself into really capturing the essence and spirit of someone like Marilyn Monroe, who is so iconic? There's so many expectations, I think, from people watching anything like this. What was your method that you chose to do? How did you research it? I'm assuming you researched it, of course. And what take us down that path?
Well, I started, as I said, I was sort of a wimp about it because I took it on as an acting exercise. I never committed to bring it to the stage. And so we hired a director, Stephanie Shine, who was a Shakespearean, she is a Shakespearean director at Seattle Shakespeare Company and Walla Walla Shakespeare and Tennessee Shakespeare now as well. And I thought that she would be great because she wouldn't shy away from the grit and the sexuality that was Marilyn. So we wouldn't sanitize Marilyn, but we'd bring her to life as a real person. And then I set off to just collect every book I could find and just started, obviously, reading. And my assistant, Kristen, she took all Marilyn's movies and just edited out the scenes of her movies.
Oh, wow.
And so when I watch a Marilyn movie, I just watch Marilyn. That's all.
Right.
And it's a fantastic way to watch a Marilyn movie. And so I started watching those kinds of things. What was really, really helpful was a video that came out a few years back called The Final Days. And it showed footage of her and outtakes when she was filming Something's Gotta Give, which is a movie she never finished at the end of her life. And that's the time period that I'm portraying her is at the end of her life.
So that was the one that she did with, was Dean Martin was in that with her, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Aren't those famous iconic shots of her by the pool, the nude shots of her by the pool, wasn't that taken during the filming of that, or was that...
No, it was. You're absolutely correct.
Okay.
You're absolutely correct.
See, I'm an authority on nude shots.
I was going to say.
That's all
yeah.
I got. The only thing I know about are the nude shots. It's the only thing I'm familiar with.
I didn't know you knew so much about
I don't think anybody else was paying attention to much else either.
Yeah.
You know, she was, she got the cover of Life from that. It was a big deal, you know.
So Sonny, was her last full feature, was it The Misfits?
Yes.
Okay. That's really astounding because I think it was the last film for all three stars. I think it was the last film for Clark Gable. I think it was the last film for, was it? You're not, Ray. Is that the case? Do you remember
yes,
that to
was.
Be the case?
Yes.
And Montgomery Clift and Marilyn Monroe. It was their last movie for all three of them.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
I'm
not positive about Montgomery Clift, but I know Clark Gable died a couple weeks later after the filming stopped.
Wow.
But yeah, that was, you know, you can imagine shooting in Reno. You know, in the dead of summer, you know.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What that was a arduous project to be sure.
Yeah. So now I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay. The show going up at the El Portal, Michael, you mentioned something about it's sort of like a homage to Marilyn. Like it's
well there's a special attachment with this show coming in, and Sandy knows this, I'm sure, but when Marilyn Monroe was a little girl, she used to go to an elementary school which was located directly behind the El Portal Theater when it was a movie palace.
Okay.
So they are in conjunction with Sandy coming in with this beautiful show, they are taking the opportunity to dedicate the Forum Theater, which is the secondary theater in the complex there, to become the Marilyn Monroe Forum Theater.
Okay.
And it will be in sync with the opening of Sonny's show as
well.
It's going to be really fun. We're going to do, they're doing a ribbon cutting on the 4th of August.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in the afternoon. And so that's exciting, and I get to cut the ribbon, so that'll be fun. It'll be a fun celebration.
Oh, that's great.
And that evening, we have all the, a lot of Marilyn fans coming in and doing a gala for all the Marilyn fans, so that will be fun too. But yeah, it's a lovely theater. It's a terrific theater, and Marilyn went to elementary school, as you're saying, at the Lancashire Elementary School, which shares the parking lot there with the El Portal Theater.
Right.
And then she actually went to movies there. So it was
in the Norma Jean days.
Exactly.
Yeah. A lot of ladies that were in the business during those days were, you know, that was the neighborhood cinema. And you know, Debbie Reynolds used to ride her bike, you know, from her home.
Well,
Cher used
to work there.
Right.
Cher
she
used
was
to
an
usher,
work.
Wasn't
she?
I think she was a ticket taker.
A ticket taker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, she's working there now.
It's sad, but
in her retirement.
Yeah, yeah. You know, she likes to help out.
She wanted to do something.
She's, you know. let's let people know how they can see this show. We should also mention the fact that it's only five performances.
Yes.
But happily, those five performances are in the main stage space.
On the main stage
which
space,
which is a beautiful
yes.
big room, so the so people won't all be in the smaller studio. I just worry people are going to think that because it's, you know, that the studio space is going to be renamed
right.
that. But it's
right.
taking place in the big theater.
Right.
And this is the, to order tickets online, it's elportaltheater.com, and theater has the R-E spelling. Or for tickets, you can call 818-508-4200. That's 818-508-4200. Five performances only, August 2nd through 5th, and Thursdays at 8, Fridays at 8, Saturdays at 3 and 8, and Sundays at 3. Only one Sunday at 3, actually. But that's very, very exciting. I want to go see
yeah,
this.
Yeah, for sure we must yeah. go. Now, Sunny, you...
So it's a fun project because it we use Marilyn's words, things she said in her life, and then we use 17 songs she sang in her movies that I sing, sometimes snippets of the song or sometimes the song in its entirety. And so it really takes us to task as, you know, the songs kind of help perpetuate the story forward, interestingly enough, that she did in her movies. And then we have several costume changes that all happen behind a, you know, a changing screen. And we carry quite an elaborate set, which was inspired by the Douglas Kirkland and Bert Stern sessions that she did, photography sessions that she did in The White Sheets.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, no.
This just keeps getting more exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really great story. I think it was really important to us, Steffi and I, and Greg Thompson, my husband, that we created a story, or that the story would stand on its own, regardless of if it was Marilyn Monroe. And it's really a fascinating, fascinating story about, and we treat her. Not as a victim, but as a powerful businesswoman of the 50s who did what it took to get ahead in those days, which mm-hmm. was sleep around a lot.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Right.
It was just the way it was. It's so
interesting to hear you say that, because that's the first thing that comes to mind. Someone sees something like this, and it's unfortunate because it's a hurdle that you as the performer have to go over. But the... You know, one immediately assumes, okay, it's going to be an impersonation of Marilyn Monroe, and just to hear that there's a fully fleshed out story and it's not like a extended review, it just makes me want to see it more. That sounds wonderful.
Right, and there's a lot of fun to be had in the play, which thankfully Marilyn was incredibly witty and
yeah.
so funny,
yeah.
and just had a quirky way of looking at things. You know, it just makes you laugh, and great little stories about. You know, her first her audition with John Huston and with Groucho Marx, and they're just wonderful little stories that are kind of enacted out, and it goes from kind of story to story, from her early childhood of not knowing, you know, even what her last name was. She didn't know who her father was, you know, whether it was, you know, Baker or Mortensen. She had no idea to. You know, what it took to kind of go through the ranks as far as Hollywood was concerned, and she makes no apologies about how it happened, and, I mean, if I didn't do it, there are 25 girls who would, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
So, and then she goes through the loves in her life. It's in two acts, and the second act is when she is famous and how she feels about fame and the loves in her life, and falling in love, I'm falling in love, I'm falling in love, and it didn't work. And I'm falling in love, I'm falling in love, I'm so excited, and it didn't work. You know what I mean? And
wow.
the rise and fall of that is where the roller coaster really starts to, you know, ebb and flow. You know, and of course, in the end, we all know the ending, which is a tragic, just a tragic ending, and she just... disillusioned, but I think it's I think the fans kind of their viewpoint of it, and they kind of have endorsed it, thankfully, thank God, and they, you know, come to see it wherever we go, and their take on it is that, you know, she kind of gets to say what she wanted to say, or she gets to tell her story in her own words, you know, finally, kind of. And get mad at the producers for
right,
a second.
Right.
You know?
Get back at them anyway. I'm curious. I'm sure you're probably an encyclopedia about Marilyn Monroe by now. Is there any truth? I heard a story many years ago about that Joe DiMaggio had continually put roses on her grave for like 25 years or something.
I think they're still done on his behalf.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you not hear that?
I had heard that, but yeah. I didn't know it'd be a fact.
Yeah.
Sonny, did you hear that story? Do you know if that's true?
Yeah, I know that it happened for many, many years, and it discontinued a while back, and I don't know exactly when that was, but the fans, the Maryland fans, I know keep up, and they're wonderfully vigilant about making sure that now they're raising money to put a little bench there, and and they, you know, make sure there are flowers there. And but they, you know, they clear them out. I think if you send flowers, they're there for only a 24-hour period. So they're not there for very long. So it's a little discouraging. But the fans are wonderful about making sure that it's well kept, and you know, they have a wonderful memorial that'll happen on the 5th at Westwood Cemetery. And a lot goes into planning that. And this is a really special one. The fans will come from literally all over the world, and we have so many coming in on the 4th, which is fun to see so many of them again. I've seen them, met many of them, and
I imagine
and it's be fun to meet the ones that, you know, I sort of meet on Facebook and put the names and faces together too. So it's a wonderful week of getting together for them, and they're lovely, wonderful, sensitive people. I have always thought that fanatical people can be just a little, or fans can be a little fanatical, and nothing could be more untrue about the Maryland fans, in that they're just sweet souls, every single one of them, bright, you know, really wonderful people that I really so much enjoyed, and that was a part of this process that I didn't anticipate interfacing with so many great people.
You'll like Paul Strelley, Sandy, because he is that kind of a person.
Am I fanatical?
An enormous fan.
Look, just because I'm wearing the Sonny T-shirt doesn't make me obsessed. You know, just because I'm working on the tattoo. I'll get that later. But anyway, Sonny,
have that by opening night.
So, thank you so much for being with us. I want to throw this out there one more time for tickets. 818-508-4200. 818-508-4200. This is at the El Portal. 5 performances only, beginning August 2nd. Tickets online, elportaltheater.com, and the show, Marilyn Forever Blonde with Sonny Thompson. Sonny, joy to have you on. Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Well, so nice to meet you via phone, Paul and Mike, and I'll look forward to meeting you in person.
Yes, same here.
Yes. Thank you again.
Safe trip. Take care. Down. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a doll she was.
Very much so.
Yeah, she was very, very sweet.
And, you know, I wanted to talk to her to see if there was any sort of how she felt about the television series that was so successful this year for NBC, Smash.
Right.
Which, of course, was all about Marilyn Monroe.
Was
it? Did you see it, Ray?
Yes, I have. I liked the show quite a bit.
I did, too. Huh? I did, too. Did you, Paul?
I saw it was probably promoted heavier than any other show for the season, because I remember seeing
the number one drama on NBC for the year.
Really? Has it been renewed?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I know it sounds comical, but a lot of times, you know, you get that drop-off, and then sometimes they don't renew.
Well, and I don't know how much longer they can perpetuate the musical, with it, which, in the story, you know, it's about a musical.
It ends with the opening, right? It's like the role, isn't it the whole, like, rehearsal process, and then it ends with the opening?
Right, but they're...
But they're trying to do that show on Broadway.
Right.
They're trying to move
it
to Broadway.
Well, I would assume that's a very logical... But it's a logical thing to do.
Absolutely.
From the television.
Oh, okay.
Aspects of it.
Oh, yeah.
Although a very touching moment about Sonny is that when I was listening to this interview, was that at least this is a story that we can teach our wives to listen to us every one once in a while.
Exactly. I hope my wife isn't listening.
Mine neither.
Michael, let's do our arts calendar, and then we'll talk to this lovely gentleman who's been so patient with us here.
All right.
You want to kick off the arts calendar?
Sure, absolutely. I got
a new thing
after
the arts calendar. I'll tell you about
it
after our first thing.
I guess I have an idea what you're going to talk about. When life is on spin cycle, the trick is finding the off switch while tumbling toward the ultimate fluff and fold. The Dryer, a one-woman show performed by Susanna Spies, I assume that's how you say her name, Paul?
I believe so.
Will feature nearly 30 characters depicting experiences of love, work, a new concept of nesting, and the foundation of teaching along LA's yellow cement road. The Dryer is directed by Cynthia Levin and playing for two nights only. This Friday and Saturday evening at the Working Stage Theater at 1516 North Gardner Street in West Hollywood. A portion of proceeds will go to the Iman Cannon, is that right?
I think so.
Iman Cannon Comedy Class at Inner City Arts Los Angeles. Tickets are $20 and available at brownpapertickets.com/event/259703.
Yes, and Cynthia Levin is just a lovely, lovely woman. In addition to being a great stand-up, she's one of the most gifted stand-ups I've seen in a long time, but she's also a very gifted director. So
nice.
I saw her attached to this. I just know it will be a very, very funny evening. So looking forward to that.
So something special you have
yes,
to tell our audience.
Yes, this is the first week. Well, if it's something special, let's give it the thing it is deserved. You know, just as a little lead-in here. This is the first week of our State of the Art sweepstakes. This is sponsored by Breakdown Services. It's a new thing. Each week, we will raffle off a different prize to a fan of State of the Arts. The prizes are furnished by Breakdown Services and include free yearly subscriptions to Casting About, casting agent directories, free video uploads for actors, headshot retouching, and this week's prize, a free yearly subscription to Actors Access, which is no small thing.
No, it's
for a
not. It's
actor.
Fantastic.
So to enter, all you have to do for our listeners is to like us on our Facebook page. So just visit facebook.com/stateoftheartsLA. Remember the LA at the end. facebook.com/stateoftheartsLA, and you are automatically entered, and it'll be a different prize every week. So, Michael,
yes.
I'm going to get the wheel going here, and you tell us who our winner is
All
this
right.
week. Hang on one second.
All right. Oh, should I stop it at just any point?
Any Maybe. Point.
Let's do it one more time.
Oh, okay, we'll do it one more time.
There you go. Round and round she goes. And today's winner is Brian Robert Bertone from Los Angeles, California. And as Paul mentioned, Brian, you will receive a free subscription to Actors Access for a full year. And if you're listening, sir, congratulations. We will also notify you through our Facebook page.
Yes, we're very grateful to Gary Marsh and Breakdown Services for offering up these things for actors.
That is so totally cool.
Good about helping actors.
So, yeah.
Now, as Michael mentioned earlier, our next guest is an accomplished theater veteran, but has also found a way to give back and share his experience and talents with those just starting out. The award-winning Teenage Drama Workshop offers teens, those going into 7th grade through those just graduating 12th grade, the opportunity to delve into the theater arts in a 6-week conservatory-style summer program on the campus of California State University at Northridge. Here to tell us about it, please welcome Mr. Raymond Saar. How are you?
Wow,
music
I've never
not
got...
from your world.
Yeah, I never got that kind of intro before.
Well, I figured, you know, I figured if you like the applause so much, you'd certainly like the Who. So how are you?
I'm fine. It's been a pleasure listening to that conversation. That's an interesting show. I want to go see the Maryland.
Yeah,
show.
It does
really
sound
good.
Absolutely.
Show.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's been great. You know, it's interesting how when I started out in my first job out of college was working for a man named Peter Marshall. He used to ask the questions in the old Hollywood Square.
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And we were opened up for Johnny Carson, Jerry Lewis, Billy Hackett, Frank Sinatra, a lot of big stars in that time. And my very first job with him was for, we opened for Bob Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, we were opening for 35,000 people. We were in the middle of a racetrack. The biggest theater I'd ever been in was in a 650-seat theater in Downey, California.
Oh,
it was a big shock. So Peter wanted to go through the entire show. We did the entire show. And in the green room, I was sitting there getting a little something to eat, and Bob Hope walked up to me and said, "Hey, kid, that was a really funny joke you told out there. But if I were you, I'd count to 10 before I said my next line." And so if Bob Hope tells you to count to 10, you're using every finger that you got to make sure you do that. But as I said that out on the stage, I realized he was teaching me about timing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And not only about timing, but he didn't do it, he did it in a kind and constructive way.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself then, one of these days I'll be able to give back. And I'm going to give back in the same way that Bob Hope had given to me, because I thought, you know, way back when he was in vaudeville, somebody said to him, hey, kid, that's a funny joke. So it's just a way of giving back my experience with Teenage Drama Workshop.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Now, there's two productions. There's Bye Bye Birdie, which you directed.
Right, I directed.
And then the other one is...
Snow White and the Magnificent Seven.
Snow White and the Magnificent Seven, yes. Yeah. And this
dum,
is only...
Da, da, dum, dum, da, da, da.
Oh, yeah.
And there's also 10 Minute Play Festival. But
yes.
Yeah.
10 Minute Play, which was very interesting because the kids write their own plays. They have student directors, most of the time stage managers who've watched the professional directors direct. And so they glean off of what we have taught them, and then they move on with their own kind of technique to teach those kids in the 10 Minute Plays. It's really fantastic.
So now the performances, do you get all of them in one evening, or is it alternating nights, or how are they doing it? Because I know it's the run's very short.
The 10-minute plays are all done on one evening.
Okay.
And the shows for Magnificent Seven, Snow White and Magnificent Seven and Bye Bye Birdie, we have 11 performances.
Okay.
And some of them done for camps. We let camps come in there, and they get to experience Broadway style theater at age 6 and 7, and some of the jokes go over their head, and some of them don't.
Right, some of them don't.
It's quite interesting when you look at yourself when you get a big laugh out of these little 7th, 8th graders, and you're going, I guess that didn't go over there.
Yeah, they are listening. They are listening.
That's exactly right.
Well, I'm curious about something because Michael has a long attachment to Bye Bye Birdie. You did it with Jerry Van Dyke.
Jerry Van Dyke, and I did it with Dick Van Dyke. I did it with Sherry Lewis. I kind of grew up in that show when I was a young boy.
Wow.
From about 13 to about 16. Yeah.
And what I'm curious about, and Michael will find this tremendously interesting being as familiar with the show as he is that how do you get it down to 75 minutes? That's what Doug Kayback was telling me about that. I mean, who makes that? Was that a directorial decision? How did you arrive at that?
Yes, that is a total directorial decision. Because I like the difficulty whenever you shorten down almost any show is the character development, how the character flows.
The growth, yeah.
If they all of a sudden drop off the face of the earth and, you know, they're going to marry the person at the beginning of the show, and then you don't know why they got rid of them, doesn't really work. So it is a director's choice on how to structure that. But we've had to cut things like the Shriners Ballet. Mm-hmm. I made into Rose there's a song called Spanish Rose. Mm-hmm. So I combined those two scenes with the song, which saved us about 8 minutes right there.
Right.
But you still get the funny. Her barging into a Shriners Ballet and pulling the guys under the table, and they're going crazy. So you have to have... I've been fortunate to have an eye about how to shorten things in a legitimate and clear way for people to understand.
Can I ask you a question, though? Don't most of the licensing companies such as MTI, Musical Theater International, don't they have a teenage children's version?
They do.
And were you working off of that script or those scripts as opposed to the full-length traditional?
They do not have a shortened version except for middle school. And then they have cleaned that up in a way that doesn't put anything controversial on the table.
Yeah, of course.
Which I imagine those things have to be edited too, because now we're so much more PC than we were 10 or 15 years ago. I'm sure that even those cleaned up versions have probably been re-scrubbed.
I can't even imagine what could you clean up really about this? Not too much.
Well,
language-wise, as I remember, it was pretty safe.
Yeah, but you can't say orgy. How do you explain that? Mommy, what does orgy mean? You go, okay. You have to clean up those types of things for kids to make it, you know, they know what a party is, and that's not going to be offensive.
Because I actually did a production of Bye Bye Birdie in college that went the other way. It was actually more exaggerated. It was an interesting one.
I think,
do you know what it was called? Do you know what it was called? It's Bye Curious Birdie.
Oh, my
good night,
God.
Everybody. Thank you so much.
I think that the interesting thing about what I've tried to do in this is to educate these kids about Ed Sullivan, who they don't know about that.
Yeah.
And also to educate them about the innocence of a teenager at that age in the 50s as opposed to the instant knowledge that we have here nowadays with YouTube and Facebook.
Right.
And, and that's the thing that is interesting. The phones are busy in the show.
Yeah.
I mean, whose phone is ever busy anymore with call waiting or with internet or with, you know, instant messaging? So those types of things kids are interested.
You know,
I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to say just what he's saying just makes me wish all the more that life has not changed so dramatically as it has now for children, because we're in such a different place as a result of this.
You're right.
And I also think that it's very interesting to look at, like when you think about, because really it's about Elvis being on Ed Sullivan. I mean, it's the causal
exactly right.
event is
sure.
that. And the idea of, you know, until television, first of all, television killed the front porch. There was the front porch where we would all go out after dinner, and then television took that away because the people would go sit inside rather. I mean, the front porch is designed to be able to talk to your neighbors and then also talk to yourself. But the fascinating thing about television at that time was that all of a sudden, a kid who went to high school in California and a kid who went to high school in New York had a television high school to emulate with their clothes, with their hairstyles. I mean, all those geographical areas were so different in what they wore to school and their hairstyles and all that. And I think it was the beginning of the, I'm going to say, homogenization of the culture, of pop culture mm-hmm. in this country. But it was such a joyous time at that time. Because, I mean, I have my mom gave me all of her 78s from the 50s. Huh. I have Elvis 78s, the Slate 78s. Don't Be Cruel. I have the Del Vikings Come Go With Me. I have At the Hop with Danny and the Juniors, all of these things, which were well before me. I was born when the Beatles arrived. I was born in 64.
How do you carry all those things?
Yeah, exactly.
On an iPod.
Right. One... two stacked 78s weigh more than my iPhone.
That's
and it is. It's like Moses coming down. It's like carrying tablets, those things, because they're slate. They're so fragile, you know?
It's so fun to teach these young kids about the 50s and the innocence, as you said earlier, is that when we put them in these kids and when we put them in these costumes and they go back in time for this 80-minute show, it's so much fun to watch how their bodies change mm-hmm. and how they really create the time.
Do they get it? Do they enjoy it?
Absolutely. They're having a great time doing the show. Not only that, I'll say I'm in their face because I want them to have a real journey while they're doing the show.
Right.
And because there's young professionals in that program and there's aspiring young actors and actresses and kids that just want to feel comfortable in their own skin. And that's the joy about that Teenage Drama Workshop, is that it creates an atmosphere where kids can feel empowered.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And it's also cumulative knowledge rather than the instant hits. You learn how to stand on that stage. You learn how to be comfortable talking in front of people. And that's the joy that I get watching those kids each night. And we have a blast in there's a song called Honestly Sincere, which you know, which we have Conrad wiggling in his hips and girls fainting left and right. And then they revive themselves. And by the end, they're all on the floor just in a frenzy when he's doing his and it's a real rock concert in a real fun way for those kids.
It sounds like it's a great show for this, because I mean I'm running through the songs in my head right now, and I don't think it's a very hook heavy show.
Yep.
I mean, very infectious songs, you know,
put on a happy face.
Yeah, Kids Are People Too, and is it Kids Are People Too? Is that the name?
No.
It's called Kids. Just Kids.
Oh yeah.
Kids.
But they're not people too.
Kids. Disrespectful oafs, noisy, lazy, sloppy, lazy. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just kids.
Kids. Right. Yeah, well, that's the title of the song.
Kids Are People Too is from another anime.
It was a TV show, wasn't it?
But now,
it was Art Linkletter.
Yeah, no, so the kids say the darndest thing.
That's where you go.
Yes, yes. I knew it was something related to the 50s.
So, Raymond, let me ask you something, and then we want to talk about your career here, too, but... how do children, do they just sign up? I mean, California State University, Northridge, amazing facilities out
there. Absolutely spectacular.
Gorgeous.
Facility.
And the New Valley Performing Arts Center out there being the crown jewel of these other lovely places to perform because there are black box theaters. And I'm assuming that's what's being used.
Plaza del Sol. No, this is in the campus theater. So it's, this is in the campus theater, and then the Snow White is right next door to it.
Ah, fabulous. But how do kids become a part of this? Do they just sign up?
I believe that it's 55 years old, and it's a summer camp where they have three in the morning. They have acting classes, mm-hmm. then singing classes, mm-hmm. and dancing classes. They have a musical theater workshop, and then we rehearse for 3 hours in the afternoon. So it in the realm of the theater and the knowledge here, teenagers are looking for somewhere to get real great training,
right.
And this facilitates that. So they can sign on online at teenagedramaworkshop.com. It's word of mouth. My daughter went there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and before I was even there, my daughter went there. And mm-hmm. it's a fantastic, fantastic learning experience for them.
I bet. I think it's very cool.
Well, I'm going to tell people how they can attend these shows.
Yeah.
For tickets, you can call 818-677-2488. That's 818-677-2488. Mm-hmm. Tickets are all available, also available through Ticketmaster. And the shows, this is the 2012 season for this, is Snow White and the Magnificent Seven, Bye Bye Birdie, and the 10-Minute Play Festival. And it's only playing through August 4th. So please, that is correct, right? Only through August 4th? Is
yes.
that the final thing?
It's in progress now?
It's in progress. We opened last night to a full house, and we want to get as many people to come and see that show as possible because the kids are unbelievable in it. It's a thrilling, thrilling, fun show, as you know.
Yes.
And it really has a lot of heart in it.
Yeah. Well, I will be there this weekend because Kimberly Van Leeuwen and I are going to go up there. Kimberly is the artistic director of Sea Glass.
Yeah.
And we're going to go up and catch that. Which night is Bye Bye Birdie playing this weekend?
It's playing on Saturday night and Friday night.
Friday and Saturday. Okay. Maybe we'll have to go Friday because I do want to catch that one. And we have a thing Saturday. So anyway, I'm sharing my whole personal schedule. Then I'm going to go and get a burger.
We're writing this down, along with all the pictures you have on the wall.
we don't have a lot of time, Ray, but I want to ask you, we've got about 7-8 minutes left, but you may be telling us two stories. We have a thing that we end the show with... and Michael knows it well, the onstage mishap or problems that happen during performance that are funny or embarrassing or both. And just curious if you had any of those to share.
There's many because I've been very fortunate to do a lot of shows my entire life. But I'll stick with the last couple of shows, Phantom of the Opera, People Know, and Les Mis. And I'll start with a Phantom show. This will teach actresses to be careful when they're about to walk on stage and their mic might be live.
Okay. Lovely setup.
I played the role of Rao, the boyfriend in Phantom of the Opera. And at one point, there is a jump. He jumps from the travelator, and from the bottom of your foot to the stage, it's 12 foot. And then underneath the stage, it's another 3.5 feet. So you're jumping 3.5 feet into a hole that is 3 feet by 6 feet. It's not your favorite time of the show. But you do get $15 a week extra for hazard insurance.
Oh, putting your life in jeopardy.
Yes.
$15 for your ankle.
Yes. Right. So how lucky of us. But your guy did it for show business. Right. So one night, I'm getting ready to jump, and I see that they have a blue light that says the door trap is open, and then they have a white light which indicates go whenever you want, but it's all covered with fog, so you can't see much. And I look down, I see the blue light, and the white light's not coming on. I look over to the stage manager, he's indicating, don't come on, don't come on. He's jumping up and down, waving his arms, don't come on. I said, so here the hero now climbs back over and is walking off the stage. And as I'm walking off the stage, the Phantom and Christine are waiting to go on. And Christine, with her microphone, unbeknownst, with her microphone on, says, oh my God, there's my boyfriend. Don't let him know I'm going out with you. the stage manager, the production stage manager who's out in the house said, "What was that?"
So what, who's in the audience?
It went all to the audience.
And no, but where was she spying this guy, her boyfriend?
I was coming down the travelator right next to her, and she was talking to the Phantom as a joke.
Oh, as a joke.
As a joke.
Okay.
I beg your pardon.
Oh,
as a joke off stage.
Hysterical. Hysterical.
And the other story was from Les Miserables. I don't know if you all know the poignant moment where Gavroche climbs over the barricade and shot in the hip, the shoulder, and then in the head. One night, he's climbing over the barricade. Little people fight, gets shot in the hip. Little people, and he gets shot in the shoulder. But you got some. And the sound guy hit the wrong sound cue. The sound cue that came out was bam, 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 bam. We looked down, and here's the little body of this guy bouncing all over the stage like he's getting riddled with bullets. And the barricade turns around, and here we are going, let us die missing our foes. And so you never saw the barricade bouncing so much with so many dead bodies laughing at the end of
the end of Les Mis in a little homage to Bonnie and Clyde.
It's
the Arthur Penn directed version of Les Miserables.
Right.
Oh, that's hysterical. That is so funny. Did you find, and we do have a little more time to touch on it. Michael wanted to address your other career.
Yeah, I mean, you've worked with so many amazing people and done so many amazing shows. What was it like to tour in The King and I with the one and only Yul Brynner?
You know, it was really wonderful. It was in his last tour. We celebrated his 4,000th performance. So
wow.
He was unbelievably... He never missed a show, and he was getting chemotherapy mm-hmm. On the days off on Monday mm-hmm. and then back on Tuesday. And the only thing he ever cut from the show was his puzzlement if his voice couldn't sustain it. And he never had, nobody knows this, never had a microphone until those last few months of the show. He did everything with just PZMs. At the Pantages Theater with 3,000 seats, he's... no microphone.
Wow.
And it was quite extraordinary to watch that performance. I use this when I'm teaching with kids. As he's dying in the show, mm-hmm. on the bed, I would watch that performance because my bow was coming up, so I was waiting for the end of the show, stood there, and he was so artistic. He would change the, not to mess with the other actors, but he would just color a line differently, or he'd read it, or he'd reach... He would fill the moment in such a profound and exciting way that it taught a young professional me something about continuing to create a character, continuing to make these characters that we have created alive, real people, as we are in our lives.
Wow.
And so I try to pass that on to these kids. So the experiences that I've had with such huge stars have helped me to be a better teacher, to help
right.
me be a better director, because I don't let them stop.
Well, and especially from those kinds of stars who were so disciplined and so, you know, trained in motion pictures, you know, as a motion picture actor, as a stage actor, and their training that led them into those places.
You're
today, everyone, you know, they've been in the business for 15 minutes, they've studied for five of those, if they've even studied at all,
right.
and suddenly they're a star.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. I'm a trained professional, and I want that for the kids that are in this program.
Well, exactly. It's a wonderful thing you're doing. Let's put that info out there again, because I think it's just really these people deserve all the attention that they can get. This is, and also want to give a shout out to Doug Kayback, because I know Doug is huge in this particular thing.
Yes,
he's
he is.
The driving force of the.
He's the driving force.
Amazing gentleman,
and great director, and just a wonderful, wonderful man, and. Has an enthusiasm and an optimism that is just really enviable. 818-677-2488. That's 818-677-2488 for the productions at the at Cal State Northridge, this teenage drama workshop. Snow White and the Magnificent Seven, Bye Bye Birdie, the 10-Minute Play Festival, playing only through August 4th. So get your tickets now. And, you know, it was funny. You were saying something, Ray, in the earlier thing. Kevin Tice, who we had on the show recently, who wrote this book, Confessions of a Transylvanian, about his days doing Rocky Horror, when Rocky Horror, the live show, was... He says something in the book which I found very interesting, and I took issue with it, and it involves a person that you mentioned. Because Kevin says in the book, he says, there's no there's no example of a better matching of actor to main character than Tim Curry as Frankenfurter in Rocky Horror. Mm-hmm. And I would have to put Yul Brynner and The King and I in terms of just a role forever associated with one person. No one can do the king aside. I mean, of course you can, and of course you honor him as much as you honor the play by doing a good job with it. But I'm racking my brain and going through musical theater history, trying to think of a role that is more attached to a particular individual. And I don't know if there
Carol Channing, Hello Dolly.
Yeah, there you go.
Rex Harrison,
My Fair Lady.
Okay, maybe there's a lot of examples. Okay, we're out of time. We gotta go. All right, maybe he was right. Anyway, we're done. We're
always a pleasure, Paul Strohle. And thank you, Ray. Thank you, Raymond.
Absolutely my pleasure to be here. Wow. You have interesting guests on board. I'm going to start listening to your program.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And we will see you all next week. Once again, it's Thursdays at 1 instead of Mondays at 4. Michael, always a pleasure to share the mic with you.
Thank you, Paul. Same here. See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.